The report was commissioned in May 2015, looking at the possible implications for Northern Ireland if indeed we were to leave Europe. Did you know about it? Probably not, because you weren't told about it. The man who's unearthed this document is Stephen McCafferty from The Detail. Good morning to you, Stephen. We'll talk to Stephen in a second or two. Mike Nesbitt, the leader of the Ulster Unionist Party, with us now. Set this out for us, Mike. What do you know about this?
Well, what I know is what you know, because Stephen McCafferty at The Detail has uncovered it. I'm very, very surprised, Stephen, because, as you might imagine, in the wake of the vote on the 23rd of June, I asked questions because I assumed, given the seismic nature of the referendum, and particularly the seismic result should the people of the UK vote to leave, I would have expected the head of the civil service to say it would be prudent to do some contingency planning here to scope out what the implications would be for Northern Ireland in the event of a Brexit vote. And that's exactly what this document is. But when I asked the questions of the first ministers back in June, they gave the clear impression that no contingency planning was done. They certainly made no reference to this document. And having listened to Martin McGuinness on the radio earlier this morning, it is clear that what he is implying is that the DUP vetoed its publication. I believe that, Stephen, to be a breach of the ministerial code, because within that code there is a paragraph on openness, and it is very clear, and I quote, "You restrict information only when the wider public interest clearly demands." Now, the public interest in the run-up to June was for information. People didn't have enough information. Everybody was being accused of spin. This is not a spin. This is written by civil servants in the former office of the First Minister and Deputy First Minister. And it makes clear hundreds of millions of euro could be lost. It makes clear Northern Ireland was a net beneficiary, although the UK as a whole was a net contributor to the EU. It makes clear that the loss of EU economic development funding would mean a cut of 8.4% in our annual GDP. And overall, a Brexit could imply a drop in our gross domestic product estimated at approximately 3%. 3%, that is massive. And yet the public were not allowed to read this document.
The immediate, in the document that Stephen McCafferty has uncovered through The Detail, this document says, I'm looking at point two under heading six, the immediate financial impact to Northern Ireland is likely to be negative. Why weren't we told about this? We asked the DUP to come on this morning to, quote, communicate effectively. That's what this new executive is promising to do. Well, they can't speak to you this morning. That's quite handy, isn't it? They have said in a statement that there are many documents prepared within departments by officials which examine possible scenarios, and they say these are rarely circulated for executive discussion as they are not executive documents requiring executive decisions.
And yet, if you listen to what Martin McGuinness said on Radio Ulster from the tour of the Labour conference in Liverpool earlier today, he implied very clearly, very deliberately, that he was relaxed about publishing it and implied it was blocked by the Democratic Unionist Party.
Let's hear what Martin McGuinness said this morning on Good Morning Ulster.
Well, you see, I have to agree to the protocols that exist between the Office of the First and Deputy First Minister, and these apply also to the DUP side of the arrangement, as it does to us.
Well, did you argue with the DUP about the pros and cons of publishing this document?
Well, the DUP are well aware of our position in relation to not just the document, but in relation to the arguments that were within the document. So, I mean, in reality, it's a non-story, because the argument was won. The electorate voted, the unionist nationalists and the Republican people of the North voted together to remain in Europe, to see their future in Europe.
It may be an answer. It just seems a little strange that you would have not used ammunition which was so powerfully in your favour.
Well, we were making the arguments, you know, anyway, and various speeches that I and our leading members of Sinn Féin made, all of the arguments that are in that report, which was, of course, a civil service report, was certainly made by Sinn Féin, and of course those arguments won the day whenever it came to people to cast their vote.
But this isn't just about Sinn Féin and the DUP knowing about this report, is it? This is about you. You were being asked. Every citizen in this country was being asked to vote in a crucial referendum as to the future of this country and the United Kingdom. We know the background to it, and we were seeking as much information as possible. Meanwhile, a report which you, the public, paid for ultimately, because that's what you do when you pay your taxes, which said that there was expected to be a drop in GDP, estimated at approximately 3%, was kept hidden from you before you voted. Northern Ireland as a location for foreign direct investment might be less attractive to companies who want to do business within the EU. That was hidden from you too. Why was it hidden? And does this sit at all comfortably with the new promise from the new executive that they're going to communicate effectively? Is communicating effectively not actually sharing information like this with you? And look at what's happened here this morning. There is no joint statement from the new executive office on any of this. The DUP, Mike Nesbitt, in a statement to the Nolan Show, they say something really interesting. They say, even within 15 pages, it's notable, however, that not one single potential advantage of the UK leaving the EU is envisaged. Such an obvious omission renders the document of only limited use. So it didn't support their case, so they described it as of limited use.
Well, it's obviously a very limited use if it's not in the public domain. And, you know, I'm chairing a committee which is supposed to assist ministers, the Committee of the Executive Office, and we've spent a lot of time over the last few weeks, Stephen, thinking about what we think success would look like at the end of the mandate. Looking back, will we be able to say we've done a good job? And what we've decided is we want to be the most effective of the statutory committees. And the number one measure of being effective is effective scrutiny of the office. And how can we scrutinise when we're not even told that this document exists? How can we scrutinise whether it's a good idea to have an executive press secretary when we're only told after the event and we're not consulted about the proposed means of appointment, which turns out to be so controversial and indeed damaging?
Well, you're making it controversial.
I think it is controversial when you have a so-called principled Republican like First Minister McGuinness who takes upon himself the powers of a monarch. How could that not be controversial, Stephen?
It was before, because I know you're tight for time this morning, the New World and other matters, because we will come back to this. And by the way, big questions. I'm not suggesting at all that Simon Hamilton, our economy minister, was involved whether this report should be released or not. There's no evidence that he was. But there is a question, a related question, to our economy minister this morning. Why, Simon Hamilton, are you ducking and diving the very simple question as to what way you voted in the referendum? Have the public not got a right to know whether our economy minister in Northern Ireland actually felt that we would be safer and better off within the European Union? Why are you ducking it, Simon? Why won't you tell the public? Why won't you communicate effectively with the public? Talking about being effective, Mike Nesbitt, the first opposition day at Stormont yesterday, the SDLP, the Ulster Unionist Party, your party, taking charge of the day's agenda, and two of the three issues that you tabled aren't even executive or assembly responsibilities. What on earth was that all about?
These are issues that matter to people, Stephen. These are issues that go to the core of people's satisfaction with their quality of life.
Bank closures and state pension changes. Nothing that the executive can decide upon. You didn't hold them to account. You chose issues which are not devolved matters.
We chose NAMA as our principal debate.
You had an opportunity to talk about three matters, and on two of the three, bank closures, state pension changes, not executive responsibilities. You're going to be a really effective opposition.
These are matters that matter to people, Stephen. You know that as well as I do. And it's not a big bang day one, year zero. It's going to take time for us to bed in as an opposition. That was the first of 10 opposition days in this term.
Yeah, you've only 10.
We will get better. We will get, that's all we're allowed because we're the opposition. You know, if we had the votes.
And you squandered day one with two issues out of the three, not even relevant in terms of the local executive power.
Well, I'm sure every woman who is impacted by state pension inequality will take note of the fact you think it is a squander of time.
I talked about in terms of executive responsibility. You're not holding the government to account. You're not squandering time in terms of executive responsibility. Get your press people to play it back to you. You'll hear exactly what I said.
It is squandering time to care about women whose state pension is affected by rule changes which came in with no warning that gave them no time to plan or prepare. You think that's squandering time? Well, that's nice. What about the people living in rural areas who can't have access to a bank? That's squandering time, is it?
Do you think there's going to be a united opposition?
I hope there's going to be a united opposition.
You're calling yourself the leader of the opposition.
Unity opposition, yeah. And it says in the Fresh Start document that although there are no official titles, they will be bestowed through custom and practice.
Because I noticed that you've launched your own Stormont Opposition Twitter account, and there's an Ulster Unionist Party logo on that.
Yeah.
So it would suggest that you feel you are the opposition. I wonder what the SDLP and Alliance and TUV would have to say about that.
Well, there are only two parties capable of, with the numbers, to call themselves parties of the official opposition, ourselves and the SDLP. And I think we've got off to a good start working with them. And notwithstanding the fact we take different views on the implications of the vote of the 23rd of June, but we've got 5 years to present ourselves as an effective cross-community opposition. And we have got off to, I think, a reasonable start, notwithstanding your criticism of squandering time talking about people's issues.
What I'm going to do, just to demonstrate how you're choosing your words very carefully this morning, is I'm going to get a clip of what I said, and we'll play it in about 10 minutes' time, and you'll see exactly what I was talking about. Naomi Long from the Alliance Party said, "So the much-vaunted first opposition day in the Assembly involved 2 out of 3 debates on matters over which the executive has no control." So Alliance taking a swipe, not at the executive, basically at the opposition.
Yeah, because they're struggling for relevance because they don't have the votes to get themselves into the executive and they don't have the numbers to get themselves classified as a party of official opposition. So, of course, they're flapping around looking for relevance.
Are you disappointed that on day one, opposition day, that Colm Eastwood didn't even turn up?
I believe Colm was at the Labour Party conference.
Well, that shows his priority, doesn't it?
That was probably something that was in his diary before the opposition days were agreed by the business committee.
Is he your deputy, second in command in this opposition?
No, I made that clear back in June when we decided not to join the executive. He's not anybody's deputy. He's leader of the SDLP.
Okay. Mike Nesbitt, thank you very much indeed. Let's speak to Stephen McCafferty from The Detail. Back to this document, which was kept hidden from you, the public. Tell us what you found within this document, Stephen.
Hi, Stephen. I think the first thing to be pointed out about the document is that it isn't written by just any group of civil servants. It was put together by the European Policy and Coordination Unit inside the Office of First Minister and Deputy First Minister. So these are the civil servants who are expert in this field. And having obtained the document under freedom of information legislation, we've been asking questions of the executive office for 2 weeks about it, and they've refused to answer any questions. It's only today that some answers have been given to the BBC after The Detail decided to publish the report yesterday. And in terms of its contents, there are a couple of important points to be made. The report is 15 pages long. It deals with the position of the British government, and it deals with the position of the government of the Republic of Ireland. And in those instances, it does discuss the options available to the British government. And in the case of the Irish government, it does mention some actual positives that may come out of Brexit for Dublin. But on the section that relates to Northern Ireland, it is entirely negative. So it does seem that the report was dealing with both positives and negatives, but there are no opportunities tabled for Northern Ireland. And in fact, the negatives that are raised by the civil servants reach across all areas of economic life. From the border, in terms of the movement of people, the movement of goods, businesses, administrative costs, the risks to farming, the loss of $3 billion in European funding within the next 5 years, the prospect of the economy shrinking. And I think the most damaging section, however, is probably on foreign direct investment, given that that's a central plank of Stormont's job creation programme. And it devotes quite a substantial section to that. Well, it goes through the likely scenarios. It says that Northern Ireland's location for foreign direct investment could be less attractive to companies who want to do business within the EU. It says that foreign direct investment access to EU markets would probably be best achieved through the Republic of Ireland, so therefore international companies might go to the south of Ireland rather than north of the border. But I think the most significant point as regards the impact on FDI is that it says that loss of FDI could impact on demand for domestic production, with a knock-on reduction in training requirements, a decline in skill levels, and demand for tradable and non-tradable services. So what it's predicting there is that a knock-on effect that ripples down through the entire economy. So I think the document is serious, and I think we have to take seriously the fact that no positives and no opportunities are listed for Northern Ireland, whereas they are present in the document for places like the Irish government.
Did you have to squeeze this report out of them? Did they give it to you voluntarily? Did you have to wait long?
We secured a number of documents under our Freedom of Information request. We do know that someone else also obtained the document under Freedom of Information. The other party requested the document in February, but weren't given it until the day after the referendum. Now, I don't know what to read into that.
Weren't given it until the day after the referendum?
Yes, and they had tabled their request 3 to 4 months prior to that. So, but we don't have an explanation for that. There may be an explanation, but unfortunately, as you referred to earlier, the Office of First Minister and Deputy First Minister has refused for 2 weeks to answer any questions on the document. So mystery still surrounds the reasons why it wasn't shared with other ministers or made available to the public.
Stephen, thank you very much indeed. As you're driving to work this morning, as you're sitting at home this morning, whether you are interested in the complexities of our economy or not, whether you're interested in the referendum or not, there's a bigger picture story here, isn't there? And it is that a document which had very interesting, to some people, very important information in it was hidden from you, the public. It was not released. If I look down this document that Stephen got, you know, it says things. I'll just take a point at random. A reinstatement of the customs border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, including passport control, will result in direct costs for Northern Ireland and indirect costs for trade. Do you remember we were talking about the implications for the border, the implications for the economy? There's a little statistic within that report there, a finding that was hidden from you, the public. And it's bizarre, this story. So the DUP don't release it into the public debate so that maybe you can make a more informed decision. But also Sinn Féin. It was the Office of First and Deputy First Minister, and they don't ensure that you get it either. Now, why not? Fran Belfast, morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
What do you make of this?
I think it's absolutely disgraceful. I think what we have is a political party of the DUP having a political policy that they wanted to be in favour of Brexit and then basically hiding any information that put into the public domain could allow people to have, as you've already stated, an informed decision as to whether or not people wanted to stay in Europe.
And what? How does it make you feel about the executive, about this shind-up, the Sinn Féin DUP partnership that there seems to be now, where they say they're going to move forward together as best they can for people like you, for all of us?
Yes, I think they need David Gordon in there as soon as possible, because with all these, you know, scandals.
He's the new press secretary.
Yes, of course, mate, yes. But with all the scandals and, you know, it seems to be every week, it's actually becoming incredible. But nearly every week you turn on the radio, you've got a story. And I must congratulate the detail. I think it's fantastic that they brought this out in the public domain, because I think we should be able to hold our elected representatives to account. And you can't hold them to account unless you have, you know, an investigative journalist corps going out and digging up these facts.
And then let's have a look at how our economy minister in Northern Ireland is treating you, the public. Now, he's only the economy minister, for goodness sake. So would it not be handy to know how he voted in the referendum, whether our economy minister had reservations about us leaving the EU or not? How about you tell me if he is communicating effectively? In other words, if he is being open with the public of Northern Ireland when Mark Crothers on The View asked him how he voted in the EU referendum. Have a listen to this effective communication from the DUP's Simon Hamilton.
Do you want to answer that question, how you voted in the Brexit referendum, or are you going to keep dodging it?
Well, you know, look, I absolutely support the party's position in respect of leaving the European Union.
And so does that mean that you voted to leave?
Well, look, you know, we're three months after. There's nothing to be gained from going back over the referendum campaign.
But you know what, Simon, absolutely supportive. You know what that leads people to believe is that you must have voted
I'm very, very.
If you're not prepared to say you voted leave, you must have voted remain.
I'm very, very comfortable with the result. I'm getting on with the business of getting the best deal for Northern
Ireland. There's nothing you can do about the result.
Executive
now.
There's nothing anybody can do about the referendum.
Sure, other than take advantage of the great opportunities it offers, which you just told us a moment ago.
But look,
hang on a second. If you wanted to lay this to rest once and for all, you could simply confirm that you voted to leave. If you don't do that, people are going to think it's because you voted to remain. Sort it out for us once and for all and we'll move on.
People aren't interested in Mahia.
Well, they are.
I'm very interested. The Minister for the Economy, which will be very badly affected by Brexit.
What they are interested in is whether we can get the best deal for Northern Ireland that we possibly can.
Ducking and diving so that you, the public, don't know if our Economy Minister actually voted to stay in the European Union. Now, why, Simon, would you want to hide how you voted? Did you see this report? Why would you not just be open with the public, Simon, and say, look, I voted to remain. It was against my party's position, but I voted to remain. Or I voted, I abstained. Or I voted to leave. Is this the new way of executive communication? Of course, executive communication should be communicated effectively. Don't forget that. So this programme has a very direct question to our Economy Minister in Northern Ireland. Are you prepared to be open with all of us and tell us how you voted? It was only the status of this country within the EU or not. That's all we're asking. Any chance of telling us, Simon? Mervyn in Hollywood. Morning, Mervyn.
Good morning, Stephen. I would be
so worried. We're currently sitting here. We wouldn't know about a document that warned of the dangers of leaving the EU, and we still don't know our economy minister's position in terms of how he voted.
I agree with you entirely. It's very, very serious. This. I voted to remain. I would vote to remain again tomorrow. But if I was someone who voted to leave, I would try to sit down and say, what convinced me amongst people who were the politicians and everybody else, what convinced me to say I want to leave and then go to the ballot box and vote leave? Because I don't want to use words. What I'm saying is we have not at any time throughout the UK been given accurate and precise information with regard to what will happen when we leave.
Well, there was lots of information given out, and there were many different newspapers and broadcasters of all different walks of life were trying to get as much information as possible so you could make an informed decision.
They were trying to get as much information. That doesn't mean to say they were successful. I mean, basically what I'm saying is I reckon if there was a second referendum, we would remain in Europe tomorrow.
Well, a DUP spokesperson has been in touch with the Nolan Show regarding our economy minister, and they have said the following. There are a small number of people who seem obsessed with rerunning the referendum campaign. The public have moved on, and like them, Simon's focus is on securing the very best outcome for Northern Ireland. In other words, they're still ducking the question.
Correct.
Has the economy minister, does our current economy minister, did he vote for us to stay in the European Union? And did he see that document that we're now talking about that warned of the dangers? Did that influence his decision?
Correct.
If indeed he did vote to stay in the EU?
I can assure you that the very small group of people who don't want to move on, in other words, is absolutely wrong. It's absolutely wrong.
What does it also say, Mervyn, about our politicians? That we're trying to, you know, we're trying to coerce and squeeze a pretty basic answer out of them. How did you vote in the referendum?
Well,
it's not in the public interest for us to know how our economy minister voted.
Stephen, just I'm going to be very quick, very brief about this. Yesterday in the Daily Telegraph, some Tory minister says there won't be a hard border between the South and Northern Ireland. I don't want any border down there. But he suggested that we put drones up. We put those things that fly in the air, controlled by somebody, put drones to keep an eye on who's coming over and who's not. That's the level of their thinking.
I'm reading more detail in this document that OFM, DFM sat on, didn't release to you, the public. Regulations concerning transatlantic air traffic are negotiated at EU level, which could be detrimental to Northern Ireland's international connectivity. You weren't told that before you voted. Loss of access to the benefits of EU trade agreements. You weren't told that before you voted. Northern Ireland is only the only part of the UK with a land border with another EU member state and the Eurozone. Due to its location, Northern Ireland would be affected more than any other part of the UK, this says. A reinstatement of the customs border between Northern Ireland, Republic of Ireland, including passport control, will result in direct costs for Northern Ireland, indirect costs for trade. You weren't showing that. An implementation of cross-border cooperation in areas such as the health service could be much more complicated. You weren't told that either. Why not? Why did they sit on this? 03030 80 55 55. Two strands happening within the first 30 minutes of the Nolan Show this morning. Well, actually three. How effective were the opposition yesterday? Their big day, their first day. Colm Eastwood didn't even attend. Strand two. Why did the OFM, DFM, Office of First and Deputy First Minister, hide this information from you? Maybe that's a pejorative term. They certainly didn't ensure that it was released to you. And strand three, are we seriously going to go through a pantomime where Simon Hamilton and the DUP use all of their energy so that we don't know how our current economy minister voted in that crucial vote?